It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up, everybody? Sunday night here on the Fade the Chalk podcast, presented by the FTN Network. How we doing? Sunday in the books. Halftime of this Sunday night game between the Eagles and 49ers. My name is Adam Pfeiffer, and we have a new episode of the Fade the Chalk podcast here. Starting tonight, every Sunday night, I will be doing a solo podcast recapping the week in the NFL. Going game by game, talking about what stood out, what was good, what was bad, injuries, and we have plenty to talk about here from week number four. There were injuries, there were massive scores around the league, and honestly, let's get right to it. But before we do that, do want to remind everybody, we are still giving away a signed Kenny Golladay mini helmet. Super easy to get in. All you do, rate and review the podcast on iTunes and screenshot it. Send that screenshot to @ChalkFade on Twitter, and bam, you're automatically entered to win the contest. We'll be picking a winner at random once we get to 100 ratings, and we are, you know, about 20 or so away. So the faster that gets to 100, the faster we give away the signed Kenny Golladay mini helmet. Let's get to these games, though. Like I said, there was a ton that happened in the NFL in week number four. Let's start with the Detroit Lions and the New Orleans Saints. This game in Detroit, the Lions get off to a good start, but the Saints end up winning 35-29. Really good game from Drew Brees here. There was a lot of concern the first couple weeks of the season about Drew Brees and his arm strength, and if he's washed, he's not throwing the ball down the field. And I didn't really buy it. Like, I talked about it on the Friday DFS podcast. Like, it's not like this is Drew Brees that's been playing in a Bruce Arians downfield passing attack offense for years and all of a sudden isn't throwing downfield. This has been a team that throws downfield at one of the lowest rates in the NFL. It's Michael Thomas on slants and it's Alvin Kamara out of the backfield. That's their MO. But I talked about it, that this could be a spot where Brees does get aggressive and does find success throwing down the field, because heading into this game, the Lions were allowing the third highest average depth of target in the NFL. And we saw just that. I mean, Drew Brees, who was averaging 5.8 intended air yards per attempt this year, which was the lowest mark in the NFL heading into this game, he was over almost at 10 average intended air yards in this game. He had six completions of at least 15 yards or more. He had two touchdowns, both of which went to Tre'Quan Smith. And once again, without Michael Thomas, the Saints really relying on the run. And they ran all over Detroit in this one. Alvin Kamara, 19 for 83 and a score. Latavius Murray had 14 for 64 and two scores. So they all smashed. Emmanuel Sanders had his best game as a Saint, 6 for 93, no scores. If you can kind of sell him with Michael Thomas expected to be back soon, go for it. And then Adam Trautman didn't catch a pass, wasn't even targeted with no Jared Cook, so he is not going to be a thing. For the Lions, the backfield's going to be interesting again. I think if DeAndre Swift, who played 5 snaps last week, who jumped up to 23 today and scored a receiving touchdown, he caught all 4 of his targets for 30 yards. If he was dropped in a 12-team league, or a 10-team league, either one, somebody that, if you have the roster spot, I would add, because there is potential for him to have like a Miles Sanders-type second half. Remember Miles Sanders last year, you know, just was playing alongside and sometimes behind Jordan Howard for the first half. Howard gets hurt, and then all of a sudden Miles Sanders is a top 12 back. That could be in DeAndre Swift's range of outcomes, especially because Kerryon Johnson, he played more than Kerryon Johnson in this game, who also got hurt at the end of this game. So definitely interesting. Good to see him play more snaps, because it couldn't be worse than it was in week number 3. Kenny Golladay scores the touchdown in this game along with TJ Hockenson. I think Marvin Jones, I hate to say it, but Marvin Jones is droppable. Hockenson and the tight ends have been more involved this season. Same with the running backs in the passing game. And Kenny Golladay is still the alpha on this team. He had 8 targets. And Marvin Jones, like, he's going to have, you know, one of those 5 for 85 and 2 touchdown games. But good luck guessing when it is. You know, Marv, more of a best ball guy. I love him. Love him, love him, love him. Hurts me to say it, but right now he is not somebody that you really want to rely on in fantasy. Let's go to Carolina and the Cardinals. The Panthers with a nice win here, 31-21. They kind of dominated this game, to be honest. They were ahead all the way, ran the ball down Arizona's throat as three different players averaged over 5 yards per carry, including Mike Davis, who scores in this game, 16 for 84 and a touchdown, had five more catches on 6 targets, played 71% of the snaps, though Reggie Bonifant did see 10 carries, but Mike Davis right now looking like a low-end one, high-end two in place of Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, McCaffrey will be back, you know, probably in, what, 4 weeks, give or take. So you can sell high on Mike Davis if you, you know, pick them up off waivers and you don't have McCaffrey on your team. There are, you know, he's got Atlanta coming up, a solid matchup. He's got a Kansas City matchup, but there are some tough ones, you know, Chicago, the Saints, and then, you know, by the time those matchups are over, I mean, McCaffrey could be back. So somebody you can definitely look to sell high on. I really want to talk about these receivers, though, because I was, you know, adamant about DJ Moore in this spot. I thought he was, you know, the best play of the slate, arguably, and, you know, it didn't really pan out. I missed on it. The matchup was good, but I overlooked the fact that, look, y'all, Robbie Anderson is the wide receiver one of the Carolina Panthers. He had 11 targets today. He now has a 25% target share on the season, or just under a 25% target share. And the reason he's the number one, you think about it. Coming over from the Jets, he signs with the Panthers and their coaching staff. Like, I think I overlooked how seamless of a fit it could have been with Matt Rhule's offense. I mean, Matt Rhule was with Robbie Anderson in Temple at college, and Anderson comes in. He's not the deep threat anymore like he was in the Jets. Last year with the Jets, Robbie Anderson averaged 15.3 targeted air yards, 7th highest in the NFL. This year, that's down below 10. So he's running more slants. He's running more intermediate stuff. His yards before the catch is way down this year. DJ Moore is running more of the deep stuff, and that's why Robbie Anderson's been consistently the number one target on this offense. Does that mean DJ Moore's, you know, going to be bad this year? No, I mean, he had a double-digit target game the other week, and this is, you know, this is a game where the Panthers did lead for the majority of it. There's going to be plenty of games where Bridgewater has to throw 45 times, and we see Moore and Anderson both get double-digit targets like we saw against the Chargers, I believe it was, or the Buccaneers. It was one of those two games. But look, I think if you went into the season projecting DJ Moore to be a wide receiver one or a top 10 guy at the position, I don't see that happening as long as Robbie Anderson's on the field, because he's fitting the offense well. He's familiar with Matt Rhule, and Bridgewater is more, you know, prone to taking the shorter route, and he's not going to take a ton of shots. So, you know, these guys, Moore and Anderson, their values are kind of going in different directions. They both seem like solid wide receiver twos, but, you know, I was completely off Robbie Anderson in the offseason. I completely missed. He's, you know, Curtis Samuel is not really a thing in the passing game. It's Robbie Anderson and it's DJ Moore. So he's been really impressive. Robbie Anderson has through 4 weeks in 2020. Like to see that. For Arizona, Kenny and Drake, man, it's not looking good. 13 for 35 and no touchdowns against the Panthers. Does not record a catch. Chase Edmonds eats into his short yardage work. He had a carry inside the 10, and he scored a receiving touchdown from inside the 10. And that's been the case through the first 4 weeks. The addition of DeAndre Hopkins has capped Kenyon Drake's pass-catching upside. He's running more routes than Chase Edmonds, or at least he was prior to this game. But Edmonds is getting targeted on his routes, and Kenyon Drake just simply isn't. You also add the factor of Kyler Murray being able to take off and run from, you know, 20, he has 2 touchdowns from 20 yards or more out this year. He's got, you know, a touchdown from within 5 yards. So it's like Drake is looking like a bust as a, you know, borderline first round pick, which he pretty much was in offseason drafts. And I think Chase Edmonds is giving them no reason, or every reason, I should say, to get more touches in this backfield. So Kenyon Drake is, you got to be a little bit concerned with Kenyon Drake right now. Moving on to Tampa Bay, 38-31 win over the Chargers. Tom Brady and the rookie Justin Herbert kind of went back and forth in this one. Really fun to watch. Brady has 5 touchdowns and 369 passing yards. I did not see this performance coming from Brady, but it was impressive. He really made some great throws down the field. I think he completed like 6 or 7 passes of 20 yards or more in this game, especially to Mike Evans and Scotty Miller. So if you had any concerns about Brady's arm strength fitting with this Bruce Arians offense, those can be put to bed because he's been making some strong deep passes all year long. Mike Evans was really banged up in this game, left it early in the game with an ankle injury, came back, was limping at times. He was definitely playing hurt, but he still finishes the game and finishes strong, 7 for 122 and a touchdown. Scotty Miller also scores on 7 targets, 83 yards. OJ Howard scored, but he suffered what the Bucs believe to be a ruptured Achilles, which would end his season. So you'll see Cameron Brate and Rob Gronkowski see more consistent snaps. Chris Godwin didn't play in this game, obviously. The Bucs turn around and play on Thursday night against the Chicago Bears, putting Chris Godwin's Week 5 status in serious doubt. So, if you're needing receiver help, Scotty Miller filled in really well. He's had a decent rapport with Brady the first 4 weeks of the season. He could be a viable wide receiver or flex in PPR leagues, assuming Chris Godwin's out in week number 5. And keep an eye on Keyshawn Vaughn. I mean, we know Leonard Fournette was out. LeSean McCoy left this game with an ankle and didn't return. Ronald Jones did all the work on the ground. He looked good on the ground here in a tough matchup, 20 carries, 111 yards. But Keyshawn Vaughn got the receiving touchdown. And Ronald Jones, he had 9 targets in this game, 6 catches for 17 yards. We know he still has a long way to go as a pass catcher. Keyshawn Vaughn, definitely somebody to keep an eye on. 2 for 22 through the air with a touchdown for the rookie out of Vanderbilt. We'll see. Ronald Jones, if you want to sell him with Leonard Fournette expected to be back, you would think not the worst idea, because it's not like Ronald Jones is going to be like a top 12 guy whenever Fournette's out. I don't think that's in his outcomes in terms of his upside. Let's move to Seattle and Miami. A lot closer of a game than a lot of people expected. 31-23 win for the Seahawks. They remain undefeated. Russell Wilson, can this be considered a bad game for Russell Wilson? 360 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's great. I mean, him and a certain player from Buffalo might be the MVP of the NFL right now. We'll talk about that more a little bit later. Chris Carson, man, that tackle made by Dallas last week, that defensive lineman where he got twisted up, looked bad for Chris Carson. Comes away with a knee sprain, and then he practices in limited fashion all week and is active, and he produced here 16 carries for 80 yards and 2 touchdowns. The snaps aren't going to wow you for Chris Carson in this game, but keep in mind he left after taking a hit, to the head. They evaluated him for a concussion. He was cleared and returned, so that took away from some of his snaps. Chris Carson, man, he's doing it as a pass catcher. He's doing it on the ground. I'm really happy to see him having, first of all, to be healthy and having a good year, because he's one of my favorite running backs to watch in the NFL. Metcalf, another game with over 100 yards. Just how efficient Wilson's been, throwing down the field. Like, Tyler Lockett, bad game from him, 2 for 39, but, you can't complain about Tyler Lockett through 4 weeks. He's been fantastic, and Metcalf's been unbelievable as well. The Seahawks are pretty cut and dry right now. Miami, Ryan Fitzpatrick, a popular streamer. I loved him this week. The yardage was there. The Dolphins moved down the field a lot in this game, but they really struggled in the red zone. I think Jason Sanders hit 4 or 5 field goals in this game. So that didn't help. Yeah, he hit 5 field goals. Mike Gesicki, swing and a miss for me. I talked about it on the podcast and in my articles and stuff all week. Seattle had been awful to the slot. Mike Gesicki, 80% of the time or so in the slot this year, and it just didn't translate in this game. Only 3 targets for Gesicki, caught 1 for 15 yards, dropped an end zone target. Better days ahead, but there will be some inconsistencies with Mike Gesicki, despite how talented he is. The Miami backfield, Myles Gaskin once again led the team in snaps, playing 64% of the Miami snaps. He only had 10 carries. Fitzpatrick threw the ball 45 times. Matt Breida played a little bit more than I expected in this game. He had, I believe, four or five touches. No, he had more than that. He had six touches, three catches, three carries. Miles Gaskin's a flex moving forward. I still think he's the lead back here. He's running plenty of routes. Caught three more passes. He was top 10 in routes run among running backs entering this game. So he's a solid PPR flex going forward. Devontae Parker, though, he had a great game. We know he had the hamstring the first couple weeks of the season, had the extra days because he played last Thursday to get right. Then he left early with an injury again, returned, and finished with a nice 10 catches for 110 yards on 12 targets. He's currently on pace for 96 catches and nearly 1,200 yards, so he's good, man. I know this wasn't this type of matchup, but even in matchups against tough cornerbacks, he produces. So Devontae Parker looked like a rock-solid wide receiver too right now in fantasy football. Let's move on to the wackiest game of the week. The Cleveland Browns drop a near 50 burger on the Dallas Cowboys at 49-38. I'm taking a victory lap here. Odell Beckham was my dude all week. Wrote him up in my Prize Picks article, talked about him on the podcast. It was more so because Dallas is just hashtag that bad against wide receivers, but Odell got his in this one. I mean, he went off 5 for 81 and 2 touchdowns through the air, adds 73 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground. He looked good. And I saw a report from Mike Florio that Kevin Stefanski had said prior to the game and during the week in practice that he is making a concerned effort to get Odell Beckham the ball early and often in games more. So that's good. He's had a ton of the team's targets when they throw the ball. It was over 26% heading into the game. It's still going to be around that 26% mark after the game. So, you know, the Browns offense definitely isn't this good. I mean, look what they did. They had over 300 rushing yards in this game. 307, to be exact. That's the most Dallas has ever allowed in a game in the history of the franchise. So Dallas's defense is legitimately just that bad. Like, I remember a couple seasons ago, everybody was projecting Dallas to be, like, the worst defense in the NFL, and it didn't really happen. It's happening now. They are that bad. They're the 2020 version of the New Orleans Saints, where you just play all the dudes against Dallas. You stack all the games against Dallas because their defense is that bad. Nick Chubb suffered a knee injury or an ankle injury in this game. Did not return. We don't know the severity of it as of the recording of this podcast, but it sounds like he's going to miss some time. We saw Kareem Hunt obviously step in and produce 11 carries, 71 yards, and 2 touchdowns. But D'Ernest Johnson led the team in carries. He had 13 for 95. I wonder if that had more to do with the fact that Kareem Hunt was banged up with a groin injury, you know, heading into this game, was limited in practice. If Hunt misses time, if Chubb misses time, Kareem Hunt is going to be a top 12 back pretty easily. But maybe you sneak D'Ernest Johnson off waivers if Kevin Stefanski just simply wants to continue to use multiple running backs. With Hunt coming in and playing the early down role in place of Nick Chubb, we did see Dontrell Hilliard play, I think, all of the third downs in the second half of that game. So maybe this will hurt Kareem Hunt's pass-catching upside, but if he's getting 20 carries a game and all the goal line work, it really doesn't matter. It'll balance itself out, and he'll be really good for fantasy, obviously. For Dallas, I mean, this is another pretty simple team. Dak has the most yards, passing yards through four games in NFL history. He's on pace for over 6,000 passing yards. There's probably going to be a game, you would think, where Dallas doesn't have to throw 60 times, but with the way their defense is looking, I mean, Dak might be the number one quarterback in fantasy this year. If he's throwing 50 times with those weapons, he's going to smash every week. And he's been posting great numbers that haven't translated for the Cowboys. But for fantasy, we don't care, and we like it. So Dak's a beast. Amari's been smashing this year, too. Like, I know they're throwing a lot, and that skews their overall targets. But Amari Cooper is still, even with CeeDee Lamb there and Michael Gallup there, he is still clearly the number one on this team. 12 for 134 and a touchdown on 16 targets. He's looking fantastic this year. CeeDee Lamb gets in the end zone for the first time in his career. He scored twice in this game. he's the number two. Michael Gallup is going to be really inconsistent because he's running a lot of vertical routes where CeeDee Lamb's in the slot and Amari Cooper is running in the slot sometimes too. Gallup's primarily playing outside, and that's hurting him. So you definitely have to rank them Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup the rest of the way. Dalton Schultz, another productive game, 4 for 72 and a touchdown, though. He did take a shot to the knee in the late stages of this game, and Blake Bell came in for the remainder of it. We'll have to see if we get an update on Dalton Schultz within the next couple days. Crazy game. Absolutely crazy. Bengals 33, Jacksonville 25, and Joe Mixon finally arrives here in 2020. Awesome game for Mixon. 25 carries, 151 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. He also catches all six of his targets for 30 more yards and another touchdown. You love to see it, man. You know, with the volume he was getting and the talent he is, he was due for a huge game. The Bengals' offensive line has been so bad this season, but they actually created a lot of running lanes in this game for Mixon, which was a really good sign. So, you know, he still played on, like, Gio Bernard Bernard outsnapped him on all the third and longs in this game, except for one. But he caught 6 of 6 targets too. So really good to see if you have Joe Mixon on your team for sure. Tyler Boyd, the number one on this team. We know Joe Burrow has loved to target the slot during his time at LSU with Justin Jefferson. He finishes with 7 for 90 and no touchdown. T. Higgins, another nice game. He remains involved. 7 targets, 4 catches for 77 yards. And then there's A.J. Green. 5 targets, 1 catch for 3 yards. He was outplayed by T. Higgins in this game for the second game in a row. And I know he suffered like a minor injury. He's holding his shoulder. He played 10 more snaps than Higgins, but with the way it's looking right now, you got to think T. Higgins is either close to or has already passed A.J. Green. And for a young team like the Bengals, who are more playing for the future, do they trade A.J. Green to a contender at some point? I think that's really in play here. And if that happens, T. Higgins becomes on a team that's going to throw the ball a ton. I mean, Joe Burrow is the first player in NFL history to have 3 straight 300-yard games, or a 300-yard passing game to start every game of his career. Like, they're going to be throwing 40 times a game. There's going to be more than enough for T. Higgins, even if A.J. Green's still around. So that's absolutely massive for T. Higgins. Oh, and oh, by the way, who did T. Higgins work out with prior to the NFL draft? Joe Burrow. These guys have a connection already. I love T. Higgins in Dynasty, but in redraft, he's trending up and up for sure. For the Jacksonville side, James Robinson is just that dude, man. Really reminding me of Alfred Morris. Alfred Morris, when he was drafted by Washington, I think it was a 6th-round pick, just burst onto the scene, took the job. And I know that the Jaguars traded Fournette, Armstead went on the COVID list, and then Ozigbo went on IR. But at the end of the day, the job's his. He had every running back carry for Jacksonville again in this game. He has now handled around 80% of the team's running back carries this year. He played 76% of the snaps. He has 100% of the team's carries from inside the 5-yard line this year. And he was once again involved in the passing game. Like, Jacksonville's been behind in each of the last 2 games, and it hasn't hurt James Robinson, who caught 4 passes today on 4 targets. Chris Thompson, not a thing, barely played any snaps, did not catch a pass. James Robinson's legitimately a top 15 running back the rest of the way, and I love it. I love when these, you know, I mean, James Robinson was undrafted. So I love when the undrafted players get a chance and run with it. It is so fun to watch. James Robinson is legit as hell. For the passing game, DJ Chark, back off of his injury, 8 for 95 and 2 touchdowns on a team-high 9 targets. Told you to buy low on DJ Chark multiple times on the podcast over the last couple weeks. Hopefully you did. He's really good. Got a couple end zone targets, converted them. Good football player on a pass-happy offense. And Laviska Shenault, another person I've told you many times to go get off waivers and hang on to because they keep getting him involved. Had 2 carries, or 1 carry in this game. 6 targets, 5 for 86. He just looks like a running back when he gets the ball. Like, he catches the ball, and all of a sudden, bam. I think these defenders aren't expecting him to run with power after. They think he's just going to kind of try to run around you or juke you out. He ain't about that, man. Visca's running right through dudes. So I love it. I love Visca. You guys know that. Make sure he is not available on any of your waiver wires going forward, because that would be a massive mistake. Minnesota 31, Houston 23. The Texans are now 0-4. Minnesota gets their first win of the season. Dalvin Cook, another guy in my Prize Picks article, smash. Back-to-back huge games from Dalvin Cook. He has 27 carries for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. Him and Alvin Kamara, man, if you have Cook or Kamara, you're feeling great right now because they're healthy and they're dominating. And Minnesota, when the game allows them to, still running the ball at a massive rate. I mean, Cousins only threw the ball 22 times in this game. But when he does throw, you know where the ball's going. It's Adam Thielen, who had 8 for 114 and a touchdown. And it's Justin Jefferson, back-to-back 100-yard games for the rookie. Should not be available in any leagues. He's completely past BC Johnson. We knew it would probably happen. Just took a little bit because with the shortened offseason and everything like that. But he looks good. Yeah, he's doing it in the slot. He's doing it out wide. It really doesn't matter. So pretty easy offense right now. And unfortunately, you know, Irv Smith, just not a thing. One target, no catches. It's going to take a Kyle Rudolph injury for him. Sucks. Definitely sucks. For the Houston side, Deshaun Watson, a lot of it was, you know, late game trailing, but that might be the case for the Texans this year. He has 300 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. I'm going to take the L on Deshaun Watson this year. I know it's still early-ish, but all offseason I was saying, you know, he's going to be a top 5 quarterback still. You should take him over Kyler Murray and these guys. It's not really even his fault, though. I mean, the Texans' offensive line is bad. The receivers outside of Will Fuller just aren't trustworthy, and Fuller's not even fully trustworthy because he's always prone to get injured. Brandon Cooks with a goose egg, completely missed on that as well today, and in the season, because Cooks has done nothing, so I'll take the L on that as well. Jordan Akins left this game with a concussion. It's just not good right now, man. It's bad. Deshaun Watson's still going to be good in fantasy. I'm going to forfeit the idea that he's going to be, you know, great. Because the way Josh Allen's playing, he's not better than Josh Allen in fantasy. He ain't going to be better than Dak. We already knew that. And Lamar and Patrick Mahomes. Kyler looks to be better because he's running at a massive rate. And Hopkins has really helped him. Gee, I wonder if the Texans should trade for DeAndre Hopkins. I think they... can you imagine DeAndre Hopkins in a Houston Texans uniform? Wild, right? David Johnson is still the lead back here. 16 carries to Duke Johnson's 5. You know, solid receiving totals, but you kind of know what you're getting from David Johnson. You know, solid RB2s, but I don't think he's going to be in that running back one discussion anytime soon. The Washington football team hosts the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens roll here 31-17. Nice bounce back game from Lamar Jackson, 193 passing yards and 2 scores, and he adds a 50-yard rushing touchdown to go on top of it. The backfield, still a mess. 9 carries for Gus Edwards, 8 for Mark Ingram, 5 for J.K. Dobbins. And you're lucky Mark Ingram scored from a yard out after Marquise Hollywood Brown was tackled down at the 1-yard line. If you're starting Ingram, you are praying that the Ravens get down to the 1. That is the case the rest of the year. We told you to sell high on Mark Ingram at the time if you could. He is a flex, and his ceiling for touches is... I mean, last year, his ceiling for touches was like 15. This year, it's like 10. Legitimately like 10. Mark Andrews, 2 more touchdowns, because if Lamar Jackson's throwing touchdowns, they're probably going to Mark Andrews and Nick Boyle. We know that. For Washington, nice coming-out game for Antonio Gibson. He handles 13 of the team's, 18 running back carries. 46 yards and a touchdown on the ground. He also adds 82 receiving yards. Really nice to see there. Got the goal line carry as well, which is always important. Peyton Barber has not been a thing at the goal line since week 1, so that's very important for Gibson. And Terry McLaurin, in a bad matchup with Haskins still playing relatively poorly, 10 catches, 118 yards on 14 targets against a great Baltimore secondary. He's matchup proof. He's a top 15 receiver every week. And look, this team is going to be trailing a lot. Terry McLaurin is just a hell of a football player. We'll see if Dwayne Haskins loses a job. You know, there was rumors and whispers about it potentially after last week's game. We'll see. We could see Dwayne Haskins on the sidelines soon. I don't think it would hurt McLaurin. you know, he's still going to be the focal point of this offense. Other than that, though, I mean, I'll take the L on Logan Thomas as well. I really liked him in DFS at 3,500. Just didn't happen for him. One catch, 8 yards on four targets. You know, it's a bad offense. It was a bad matchup. I just thought with McLaurin against guys like Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters that maybe a lot of the offensive attention would go to Logan Thomas. That wasn't the case here. He's still been heavily involved outside of this game. But yeah, definitely a miss for me on Logan Thomas here in week number 4. Let's go to the 4 o'clock games, and they weren't great. Not going to sugarcoat it. They were not great at all. The Rams, 17-9 win over the Giants. Whew, Twitter was not happy at all about the Daryl Henderson usage. After dominating for consecutive weeks, especially last week against Buffalo, where he out-touched Malcolm Brown 21-7, just 8 carries for Daryl Henderson to Malcolm Brown's 9, that was shocking to me and for a lot of people because it looked like we could finally trust Daryl Henderson. He was, you know, a lot of people wrote him up as like a smashed borderline RB1. I don't think it was, you know, the wrong call. It was just odd to see. Malcolm Brown plays 35 snaps. Henderson plays 22. Barely touched the ball. And we know Cam Akers is coming back at some point. So just when we think we figure out the Rams backfield, this happens. You know, if Malcolm Brown was dropped, you can pick him up. As speculation had, we know that teams are needing running backs. It's just weird, man. It's so odd after how good Daryl Henderson's been that he just didn't get to work here. Didn't even see an injury. I don't think he was injured at all. Just really odd. The passing game was really, really dormant for the Rams outside of a 55-yard catch and run for a touchdown for Cooper Kupp. Robert Woods, 7 targets. Kupp had 7 targets. Higbee, it's not looking good for Higbee. I talked about him in my snaps and targets article and in my stock report article. He's just not running as many routes. Gerald Everett's on the field a lot. That's hurting. The Rams are running the ball at a massive rate. That's forcing Higbee to block more. So Tyler Higbee is not going to be a top 8 or maybe even 10 tight end this year. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen. He's not running enough routes. For the Giants, really nothing to see here. I thought Devontae Freeman looked pretty good. 11 for 33 on the ground, but as a pass catcher, 4 for 35 yards, had some burst. Maybe he starts to take away from Wayne Gallman. It looks like it's going to be Wayne Gallman and Freeman going forward, but Freeman looks to be the 1A, so possible waiver wire add for you. They got Dallas next week, so Darius Slayton, Golden Tate, Evan Engram, they're going to be in good spots. Tate, disappointing game, just 6 targets. Slayton had a tough matchup against Ramsey and company, but 7 targets is encouraging despite the poor matchup for Darius Slayton. Buffalo 30, the Las Vegas Raiders 23. How about the Buffalo Bills 4-0? It's fun. It's fun in this house watching the Bills play football. Josh Allen, man, he's good. Whether the haters want to admit it or not, and Twitter's been pretty quiet with Josh Allen making throw after throw. That throw he had to John Brown that should have been a touchdown was legitimately one of the best throws made in the NFL this year. And it's another great game for fantasy. 288 yards, 2 touchdowns, adds a rushing touchdown from a yard out. Stephon Diggs is legitimately a top 5 receiver in the NFL. 6 for 115, including a 49-yard catch where he mossed the Raiders defender. He's given them just a completely different dimension. I talked about a lot how Brian Daboll has just opened this offense up for Josh Allen. They're aggressive. They're passing on first down at one of the highest rates in the NFL. They're passing when they're ahead in games on first downs to you know, ice the game. It's awesome. Singletary, once again, got the majority of the workload with Zach Moss out, but he scored. He had 18 carries, and he scored from 3 yards out, man. Love to see that. John Brown, awesome. Cole Beasley had a touchdown. Gabriel Davis, 1 target, but he made it count with a touchdown. Like, they're just loaded on offense. They're absolutely loaded. Brian Daboll is just, Josh Allen's getting all the credit. Brian Daboll is calling some incredible plays for this Buffalo Bills offense. So, I'm drooling, but sue me. For the Raiders side, I thought it was really encouraging Josh Jacobs' game here. I know the production wasn't great, 15 carries for 48 yards. The Bills kind of sold out to stop the run this game. I was watching the whole game. But Josh Jacobs had 3 catches for 25 yards on 4 targets. And here's the encouraging thing. He was in the game a lot in that fourth quarter when Buffalo was trailing. You know, this was last year. It was all Jalen Richard in that role. But Josh Jacobs was on the field a lot there. He played 50 snaps. Jalen Richard played 14. Devontae Booker played 6. So 50 out of the 74 snaps belong to Josh Jacobs. So that's really encouraging to me. I know the overall stat line doesn't wow you, but I really like to see that from Jacobs. Darren Waller, a solid game for him. 12 targets, 9 catches, 88 yards, did lose a fumble. And then Hunter Renfrow, popular kind of cheap player or flex play with Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs out. You know, 5 for 57 on 8 targets. He'll live with it, but definitely nothing crazy. But the main takeaway from this game for me is the fact that the Bills offense is legit and Josh Jacobs being involved in negative game scripts like that, really encouraging for his value going forward. All right, last game of the main slate, the Eagles and Rams Sunday night game, or Eagles and 49ers Sunday night game, is in the second half right now as I'm recording this. But this is the worst game of the week. This was bad. This was worse than the Jets game. Colts 19, Bears 11. Phil Rivers was awful in this game. I know he had 190 yards on 16 completions, 1 touchdown to Mo Alie-Cox. Jonathan Taylor had 17 carries in this game. He should have had 25. Like, they gave Nyheim Hines 9 carries. He had 24 yards. Jordan Wilkins turned 9 carries into 15 yards. Last week, I was not worried about his usage because they were up. You know, the game was over at halftime last week. But Jordan Wilkins got a lot of carries early in this game. I didn't like that. He didn't look good, really. I hope that Frank Reich and the Colts move on from this crap and give Jonathan Taylor 20 carries a game. We'll see. He's still an RB1, but that was just frustrating to watch. T.Y. Hilton, you know, this team's going to run a big chunk of the time. So T.Y. Hilton's looking more like a wide receiver 3 right now, to be honest. For the Bears, Nick Foles didn't look great in this game. 5.9 yards per attempt. Allen Robinson got a lot of his production on garbage time. He had like 2 20-yard completions and a touchdown in garbage time. But we'll take it. 7 for 101 yards on 10 targets in that score. Just 10 carries for Dave Montgomery. Cordell Patterson had 3. The Bears were behind a lot in this game. Foles threw 42 times. Anthony Miller, nothing in this game. Jimmy Graham, you know, didn't score but had 5 targets. He's probably a low-end tight end 1 going forward. Dave Montgomery also had 6 targets. That's really encouraging. He was on the field on a lot of their passing plays and ran a good amount of routes in the first game with Tariq Cohen out for the year. That's encouraging for Dave Montgomery for sure going forward. Other than that, though, I think that's it. I really, really, really wanted to do this podcast. We were talking about it, and I think that's going to help a lot of people, and not only everybody listening who didn't have the time to watch every game or go through all the stat lines, but it helps me. Because I have to, you know, look deeper into games and analyze what I'm seeing. And it's stuff like the Josh Jacobs thing. A lot of people will look at his stat line and say, yeah, Josh Jacobs, bad game. But if you watch the game and look at the snaps and look at how he was used and when he was used, that's encouraging. That's where you can find signs of players that you could, you know, you like their role going forward. And if somebody else is just looking at the box score and that's it, you know, maybe you can trade something on the cheap for a guy like Josh Jacobs. So D-Bro will be back with myself on the Monday podcast where we go through the early look at waivers for week number 5. Not a loaded week, but there's definitely some interesting names that stand out. And of course, we'll get all the podcasts the rest of the week. The Trade 4 episode on Wednesday and the Friday DFS Game by Game podcast. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. All the FTN Twitters, you know, FTN Network, FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets, checking out all the content. We've been crushing it. Thank you for listening. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Have a great, hopefully your Sunday was great. Have a great Monday. We'll see you guys next time for Fade the Chalk. We are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.